You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman with you. And breaking news, by the way, gay marriage just got legalized in Cook County. We will have at the top of the next hour Ed Yonica, the Director of Communications and Public Policy of the ACLU of Illinois, on about that. And Craig Aaron, the President and CEO of Free Press, will be on in our third hour to talk about net neutrality, the FCC, and Tom Wheeler, the head of the FCC, the former head lobbyist, basically, for the telco industry. But it's the first hour of our program on Friday, which means it's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders is on the line with us, live from Burlington, Vermont. Senator Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So, boy, you've got a lot on your plate, and there's been a lot going on.
Well, there has been. And let me just touch on some of the issues we have been working on. I hope that many of the listeners and viewers read recently or heard recently that President Obama decided to remove the so-called chain CPI, which is another fancy, it's a fancy expression for a cut in Social Security, from his budget. That's something he has been proposing for the last several years. And that is enormously important, because it amounts to a major, major victory for the people of this country, who understand that it would be just terrible in these difficult economic times to cut, make substantial cuts in Social Security for tens of millions of Americans and for disabled veterans as well. The point that I want to make here, as somebody who's been very much involved in this whole process, is that 2 or 3 years ago, people may recall that we had not just the President of the United States talking about chain CPI. We had virtually every Republican talking about it. We had Democratic members of the Congress talking about it. We had not just the Koch brothers talking about it, but we had fellows like Pete Peterson, as a Wall Street billionaire, who put hundreds of millions of dollars into the effort to cut Social Security. We had the Bowles-Simpson Commission talking about the chain CPI. So we had the whole world. We had a corporate media telling us that Social Security is going bankrupt, and that entitlement reform needs to take place. We had all of that stuff going on. And yet we ended up winning the victory and preventing cuts in Social Security. How did that happen? It happened because we have a number of grassroots organizations all over this country, senior groups, labor groups, other groups, who made it very, very clear that they are unalterably opposed to these cuts. And they mobilized, and they finally made the point that it would be a very difficult political and dangerous political decision for anybody to be talking about cuts in Social Security. So Republicans have backed off, the President has backed off, and for the short term at least, we have won a very, very significant victory, because the American people organized around this issue. And the lesson here goes beyond Social Security. The lesson is that what takes place in Washington is these guys want to work behind closed doors. They want to sneak devastating provisions into legislation, which will harm a whole lot of people. But when we can get the word out, when we can have an upfront debate about it, and when it is clear in poll after poll that the overwhelming majority of the American people, Democrats, Republicans, independents, are very clear that they don't want cuts in Social Security, they don't want cuts in Medicare, we can win these fights. And we've got to take this lesson and broaden it to other areas as well. So I felt very, very good about that. The other victory that we won a few weeks ago was when the President, and the President just signed this into law, issued an executive order raising wages for federal contract employees. We have hundreds of thousands of workers in this country and around the world, in fact, who are being paid very, very low wages, sub-minimum wages, with federal government dollars, with taxpayer dollars. And some of us said, no, that's wrong. We're not going to pay starvation wages to federal employees or federal contractors. And that, as a result of a lot of grassroots activism around that issue, the President signed an executive order. So it's another victory. Recently, I have been concerned, as somebody who worries very much about climate change, And we have a pretty good caucus in the Senate right now focusing on climate change. I've been really disturbed by the nature of the media coverage that we're seeing. And one of the outrageous examples of that is that in an entire year, the Sunday morning talk shows, which are very important not only unto themselves but in getting the other media to be focusing on issues, they devoted something like 20 or 25 minutes to discussion of climate change in a given year, in a whole year, the major networks. And what some of us did, I think we're 14 signatures on it, wrote to the presidents of the networks, and we said, you know, this is what the scientific community calls the major environmental crisis facing our planet, and it's only going to get worse if we don't transform our energy system, if we don't deal with these issues. I was very pleased to see that just last week, you had the three networks literally simultaneously on Sunday morning talking about climate change. So I think we can put some pressure on them and make them understand this is not an issue being debated anymore in the scientific community. Climate change is real. It's causing devastating problems right now. It will only get worse in years to come if we don't cut greenhouse gas emissions. So we're making some progress in that area. There's an issue out there that, as I understand what you said a moment ago, Tom, you're going to be discussing this in a few hours.
Yes.
And that is net neutrality and the impact of the merger between Comcast and Time Warner. One of the concerns that I think every American should have is the degree of media concentration ownership that we have in this country today. You have smaller and smaller numbers of huge multinational corporations controlling what we see, hear, and read. And this is a real threat to American democracy. I mean, it manifests itself in the way I just mentioned, that where the coal companies and the oil companies and the fossil fuel companies have so much influence over television, for example, that somehow climate change became a non-issue on Sunday talk shows. But it also manifests itself in, for example, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. This is the largest trade agreement in the history of the United States. It has gotten virtually no discussion at all in terms of the major networks. And that's not an accident because all the corporations favor it, and they just don't want to talk about it too much. They want to quietly get it passed. In any case, what is happening now is a federal court recently ruled against the FCC in terms of net neutrality. In my view, the FCC and Chairman Wheeler have got to be very vigorous in talking about the importance, the enormous importance of net neutrality, in understanding that the Internet is not, quote-unquote, an information provider, but a telecommunications industry, that it needs to be seen as a common carrier, that it needs to be, what it does needs to be done in a democratic way, which means that you can't discriminate and give the big companies or the big websites an advantage over the little people, the small business people, or the average person. So this is, in itself is a huge issue and one that we are going to be working on as well. So those are some of the issues that have come across my desk in the last week.
And I think one of the things that I'd like to point out, you're not saying it yourself, but it is so true, particularly with the chain CPI and this global warming on TV, Senator Bernie Sanders was at the tip of the spear on these issues. You, sir, were leading the charge with your newsletter, your website, your statements in public, your discussion on this program, everything that you've been doing. You're going right to the president's office and talking to him, and I just want to acknowledge you for that.
That's very kind of you, Tom.
But it's very true, and it's a testimonial to the importance of getting really good people elected to public office. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's Brunch with Bernie. Our Brunch with Bernie hour will be back with your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. 15 minutes past.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Check out Bernie's website, by the way, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for his free newsletter, the Bernie Buzz, and it's a great news source as well, a great news source. And welcome back. Senator Sanders on the line with us. Shall we pick up some phone calls, Senator?
Let's do it.
Okay, Deborah in Rochester, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Deborah?
Hello, Senator Sanders. Yes, Senator Sanders. Hello, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good, thank you. My question is, when are we going to get serious about closing the tax loopholes on corporations that offshore jobs overseas and park trillions of their money to avoid paying taxes here in the United States?
Well, Deborah, thanks very much for that question, which touches on an enormously important issue. You know, in America today, we have the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth. We have families all over this country who are struggling to put food on the table. We have real unemployment of not 6.8%, of 13%. And yet what you're seeing coming from the Congress and from our Republican colleagues is cuts in food stamps, a refusal to extend long-term unemployment benefits, continued efforts to try to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And they do all of these things under the guise of deficit reduction. They are very, very worried about the deficit. And by the way, I got to tell you, when they went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan and they gave tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires under Bush, they weren't so worried about the deficit. But that's another story. But the point that Deborah is making is that when you look at the budget, you can't just look at spending. You also have to look at revenue. And the fact of the matter is that we are losing, as Deborah implies, about $100 billion every single year. That's an enormous sum of money, because many of these large corporations are sheltering their money. They're just putting their money into the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and other tax havens where they don't have to pay any taxes on that at all. And I have introduced legislation. Others have introduced legislation to deal with that issue. At a time when one out of four corporations doesn't pay a nickel in federal income tax, and at a time when corporations in this country are enjoying record-breaking profits, it is absolutely imperative that we end those loopholes, that we bring in that revenue, that we use that revenue to create jobs, to educate our kids. That's what we've got to do. So I thank Deborah very much for her important question.
Pam in Vail, Oregon, we have just a minute to the break. Pam, a quick question for Bernie?
Yeah. Bernie, it's an honor to talk to you. Hey, is there any way for the president or the Congress, but I'm thinking the president with one of those executive orders, that he could force the power companies to put solar panels on top of power poles, like he's forcing the car companies to increase their mileage? Anyway.
Pam, that's a good question. And again, you're touching on a very important issue. Tom, I don't know how much time we have left.
About 20 seconds.
Well, let me just say this, and we'll pick it up after the break. We have made, under Obama, some good progress in terms of moving to sustainable energy. A lot more solar out there, and a lot more wind out there, and other sustainable technologies, a lot more now than we had 5 years ago. But given the enormity of the problem, we should be doing much more, and I'll talk about that.
Okay, we'll pick that up on the other side of the break. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders. Place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say no to our program. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. This is our Brunch with Bernie hour. And Senator, you were just finishing a thought on
what can the president do to expand solar? What can he do with an executive order? And I think there are things he can do, but long term, it's much more effective if we have strong legislation. What I would like to add to that, and many listeners may not know this, is that right now the federal government provides huge subsidies for fossil fuel, huge subsidies for nuclear power. In fact, if the federal government was not providing insurance for the nuclear power industry, it would not be in existence today. Given the severity and the dangers we face in terms of climate change, in my view, we should be doing far more than we are currently doing in terms of pushing photovoltaics, and in terms of pushing concentrated solar, which is another technology. Interesting piece of news is just in Southern California a couple of weeks ago, Tom, there is a new power plant, a concentrated solar power plant, which will provide electricity to about 160,000 homes, solar. That's what we have got to do, both in terms of utility scale and in terms of rooftop photovoltaics. The president can do much more, and Congress should do much more. The problem, clearly, we have in Congress is that our Republican colleagues, by and large, don't even accept the reality of climate change, not to mention not wanting to go forward in an aggressive way towards sustainable energy.
Allison in Sugar Grove, Illinois, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. My question is in regards to the STEM funds. I have a degree in applied mathematics, and I work at a local community college that receives STEM funds. And my concern about this is that what are you doing to check on these schools? Because I feel like the people who have the degrees, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, are being undercutted at this school with the ongoing adjunct problem. And, you know, I'm a tutor there. I was told that a student could tutor just as efficiently as me. And the peer tutor is going to a STEM meeting, I find out. So it's upsetting me, and I was just wondering what you're doing to check up on these schools to make sure that, you know, they're promoting the program correctly and they're not undercutting the people who have the very degrees that they're trying to promote.
You've raised, actually, Allison, a number of questions, some of which go beyond the issue of STEM, and that is the role of faculty in colleges and universities. And I think what we're seeing more and more is colleges and universities trying to utilize part-time staff, people who have lower degrees, rather than providing opportunities for tenured professors and PhDs. So that's an issue unto itself. In terms of STEM, I think, you know, clearly the goal is that there are in this country hundreds of thousands of decent-paying jobs, but we don't have and a workforce that can qualify for these jobs because we don't have the training in computer skills or in mathematics. So that's what we're trying to do. So thank you very much, Allison, you know, for your question.
Robert, in Rochester, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, this is Robert Jones. Tom and Senator Sanders, I just want to say that both of you are very, very fine Americans, and we appreciate you much.
Thank you.
My question is, we've got a group out there that act in secret, but their policies are becoming very public, and the group is called ALEC. When are we going to expose them and our politicians that we pay to serve us that are serving ALEC and all the other multinational companies?
Okay, thanks for the question, Robert. Robert touches, I don't think ALEC is the end all. It really goes, in my view, beyond ALEC. ALEC is just one of the manifestations of the movement in this country toward an oligarchic form of society. What you have right now in this country today are three major political forces. You have the Democratic Party, you have the Republican Party, and then you have, for want of a better description, the Koch Party, the Koch Brothers Party. And it may well be that of the three, the Koch Brothers are the most powerful, along with some of their billionaire allies. And what you're seeing is billionaires in this country, led by the Koch Brothers, who come up with organizations like ALEC. And ALEC is a means by which they promote legislation at the state legislature level, cookie-cutter, anti-union legislation, anti-public school education legislation, anti-worker legislation, et cetera, et cetera, pro-business legislation, pro-corporate legislation. And they work with state legislatures to get this stuff passed. But that's just one small part of what they do. We're looking now at a group of people who have an extreme right-wing agenda. What is their agenda? Their agenda, simply stated, is to repeal every major piece of legislation passed by the U.S. Congress in the last 80 years. You think of the legislation, they want to repeal it or significantly diminish it. What do I mean by that? In terms of Social Security, they would like to privatize Social Security. And that means that you invest in Wall Street, you hire a consultant on Wall Street for your retirement. They want to end Medicare as we know it right now, making it into a very, very different type program. They want massive cuts in Medicaid. They want to abolish the Department of Education, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Energy. Some of them would want to privatize the Veterans Administration. Any government program out there that serves the needs of middle class or working class people, they want to significantly alter or do away with. That is their agenda. That is their agenda. And it is an enormous danger to the democratic process and middle class people in this country. And we've got to fight back.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman Program. Senator Sanders taking your calls. Check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us taking your calls. And, Senator, pick up some more calls here.
Let's do it.
Okay. Myrna in St. Ignatius, Montana. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders. They call me Lynn. I live on the Flathead Indian Reservation on the outskirts of a little town called St. Ignatius in Montana. Verizon has rented property from an elderly non-tribal member, and they are building a cell phone tower about 400 feet away from my home, but also from the K-12 school where I taught, and also within 2 miles of a large tribal health center. Is there any, you know, I'm interested in the effects, I know some of them, but also any laws about the tower close to the school or clinic and any actions that can be done?
I think that would be primarily a local issue, a planning issue, and a county issue as to where cell phone towers would be placed. So I think it probably would not be a national issue. Okay.
Matt in Crown Point, Indiana. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for watching on YouTube.
Hi, thank you. Senator Sanders, I volunteer with an organization called the Wolfpack working to address the issue of money in politics. I know you've been a strong advocate for campaign finance reform in the Senate, and I know that your proposals for a constitutional amendment have been pretty well stonewalled. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the possibility of passing a free and fair elections amendment through the other route laid out in Article 5 of the Constitution, a convention of the states.
First of all, thank you, Matt, for your work. In my view, people must appreciate that if you're concerned about any of the important issues facing us, health care, education, climate change, education, whatever it may be, you must be concerned about campaign financing and how we can create a situation where a handful of billionaires and all of their money are not the determining factor in American politics. So Matt raises a very interesting issue. Matt asks, it is true that some of us, I and others, have introduced constitutional amendments to overturn this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision. In addition to that, there is legislation trying to move us toward public funding of elections, and I support all of that. What Matt is asking is, can we go another route to a constitutional convention? The danger there, Matt, is once you open that door, you don't know what's going to come out of it. So at the moment, at least, my feeling is that we need a massive grassroots movement, and we're beginning to see it. I think we have something like 16 states that have gone on record in supporting the overturning of Citizens United. I think you got hundreds of towns around the country. I think this is a dynamite political issue. I think it brings almost everybody together. You got a lot of honest conservatives out there who understand that American democracy is not a handful of billionaires contributing hundreds of millions of dollars into the political process. So I see us with a real opportunity to rally the American people to pass the constitutional amendment. That's the route that I'll stay on for a while.
Okay. Kevin, in Wilmington, Vermont, watching on Free Speech TV, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. Quick question about the Sandia Labs teaming up with UVM, but most importantly, are there Senate rules where the whole Senate could debate and possibly censure Senator Corker for what he did with the VW situation the other day? I find that very, very troubling.
Well, thanks, Kevin. In terms of Senator Corker, he came out in opposition to a union drive in Tennessee. I think he was wrong, but he does, in fact, have the right. I often come out on those issues, and I come out for the workers trying to form a union. I don't think he is subject to censure. In terms of Sandia, what we're trying to do here in Vermont is work together, and we've made some progress on this in developing a consortium between the Sandia National Lab, the University of Vermont, some of our utilities, and some of the colleges, in doing a number of things, but mostly, to my mind, trying to figure out a way that Vermont can lead the nation in terms of energy efficiency and sustainable energy. So we're making some progress in that, Kevin.
Mark, in San Francisco, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I wanted to bring up the fact that a lot of pensions were devastated because of Wall Street. That happened to me, and also my 401k took a beating. So what I'd like to see is a tax on Wall Street and use that money to put into Social Security, because I'm not the only one in this kind of a situation. This is a big issue that needs to be addressed, and I think we ought to take the offense and go after Social Security and make it stronger.
Well, Mark, thank you very much. You're absolutely right. As a result of the greed and recklessness and outrageous behavior on Wall Street, a whole lot of people lost a whole lot. They lost their jobs, they lost their homes, and some of them lost their life savings or a good part of their life savings. And I happen to agree with you that I think we need, among other things, a transaction tax or transaction fee on Wall Street transactions, stock transactions. And I think that could raise a substantial sum of money. Could do a lot of things with the money. In terms of Social Security, and I want to reiterate the point that Mark made, retirement security in this country is, in fact, as he indicates, a huge issue, because people's income has gone down in many, many years. People have lost good-paying jobs, are now working for lower wages. They haven't been able to save. They have very little in the bank or in their accounts to deal with their retirement. So Mark is right. I think we should not only work to save Social Security and prevent any cuts, we need to make Social Security stronger and more expansive. There are ways to do that. One of the ways you do it is to lift the cap on taxable income into the Social Security Trust Fund, which today is about $117,000. So somebody who makes a million a year contributes about the same amount as somebody who makes $117,000. You begin to work in that area, Social Security will be strong for the next 50 to 75 years, and then there are ways that we can work to expand benefits to those who need it most.
Michael, in Clayton, North Carolina, watching us on the DirecTV satellite system on the Free Speech TV channel, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Senator Sanders, I would like to know your opinion on the recent ruling in Nebraska by a district court, which found that the use of eminent domain was unconstitutional and set an injunction preventing the governor and the Nebraska Department of Environmental Quality from taking any further action to authorize or advance the pipeline under the unconstitutional law.
I don't think that the courts ruled that eminent domain is unconstitutional. I think they ruled that the way the state legislation that had been passed in Nebraska is unconstitutional. I think I am a strong opponent of the Keystone Pipeline, well above and beyond that particular issue in Nebraska. And the reason that I am opposed is that we have finally got to understand is that we need to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel. And approving this Keystone Pipeline and that's now in the hands of the President and Secretary of State Kerry. To approve that pipeline is essentially to give a green light and to say, yeah, we don't have a problem with more and more, particularly in this case, dirty oil. It's okay. And I think that's an absurd remark to make. The goal is to move away from fossil fuel, not to encourage its production and make its delivery to the West Coast even easier.
Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. The president and the Democrats are protecting Social Security. If the president had been for the chain CPI at any point, it would already be law because all the Republicans are for it. You also implied that the Koch brothers are separate from the Republican Party. There's actually no difference between the Koch brothers and the Republicans on any issue. Isn't it true that the Koch brothers and other selfish billionaires own and control the Republican Party?
To an increasingly large degree, that is true, but it's not total. There is a war within the Republican Party, as I think most political observers know, between the extreme right-wing Koch brothers and the Wall Street and corporate America and Chamber of Commerce faction. So you're seeing, you know, major fights, for example, in Kentucky between what I would say is more of the Wall Street type, Mitch McConnell, versus the Tea Party type, will be supported by the Tea Party faction, Koch brothers and so forth. So it's not, but they do dominate and increasingly dominate the Republican Party. That is absolutely true. And the way they do it is not just through political contributions. They do it through all of their think tanks and their organizations and their roles in the chairs they have in universities and their influence in the media. So they are enormously powerful. In terms of the chain CPI, I would disagree with you. I think what the president was basically saying is that he was willing to go forward on it. He came up with this voluntarily. He appointed Bowles and Simpson to a deficit reduction commission who came up with this idea. What the president did not accede to is if the Republicans have not come up with significant revenue, he did not go along with it. But I am sorry to have to tell you that I think the president went much, much too far in supporting this chain CPI.
A year. Yep. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this on our Brunch with Bernie program, our national town hall meeting.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The guy I think of as America's senator. His website, Sanders.Senate.gov. We'll be right back. Welcome back.
And before we go further, if
sure.
I could,
sure.
Just make a brief comment. We talked about it earlier about the Comcast takeover or proposed takeover of Time Warner. On my website, Sanders.Senate.gov, I asked folks to comment on that. We have received over 8,000 comments.
Whoa.
On that proposed takeover. And if anyone, and I'm going to read some of them on the floor of the Senate. And if people would like to write about their concerns about this proposed merger or takeover, I would love to hear from you at sanders.senate.gov.
Great. And I'll mention that again, too, after the break. Al in Rome, Wisconsin, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Senator, I don't envy your job. I wouldn't have it for $1 million. But I'm wondering if anything's happening on decoupling discharges from VA benefits.
On decoupling
military discharges from VA benefits.
I mean the question of whether somebody got an honorary discharge. Yeah, it is an issue. Here's the issue. And as chairman of the Veterans Committee, I want to tell you how we are working and hope to have on the floor of the Senate this week the most comprehensive veterans legislation that has been seen in about 20 years, which, if we can get it passed, will do a whole lot of good things for veterans and their families. In terms of the issue that you raised, it's a very important issue, and here's the issue. We know that in wars like the war in Vietnam and elsewhere, a lot of guys were discharged with dishonorable discharges because they were already suffering from PTSD and other problems, and they were unable to get out of the military with an honorable discharge. Now, having received a dishonorable discharge, they're not eligible for a variety of VA benefits. And that's the issue I think that Al is talking about, and it is an issue that we are looking at.
Okay. Let's see here. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good day, Senator.
Hey, Ed. How are you?
Doing good. I was looking at the news, and I saw that the diplomatic service in Kiev is now picking up their mail with an armored car as well as an ordinary SUV. They throw their ordinary mail into the SUV, and God knows what they're throwing into the armored car. I suspect bales of $100 bills to finance the CIA's destabilization of Ukraine. Could you look into this, please?
Well, we are going to be looking into the Ukraine in general, but I have no knowledge of what you are just suggesting.
Okay. Steve, in Irwin, Tennessee, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, I'm all for food stamps, but I observed a woman the other day, heavyset, three children, heavyset. She had $165 worth of food stamps items. Three quarters of them were Pepsi's, mm-hmm. junk food.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do anything about stopping the buying of with food stamps
of junk
soft
food,
soft drinks, junk food?
So we're going to have to pick the answer. We're going to have to pick that answer up on.
Take it after the.
Yeah, on the other side. Steve, thank you for the call. We'll have Bernie answer that question right after the break. It's 10 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. And don't forget, you can. Well, I'll mention it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Special mention, Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. He's looking for your comments on the Comcast-Time Warner merger, and he will be reading some of them on the floor of the Senate. So you can get over to sanders.senate.gov and post your thoughts on that merger. And, Senator, you were
Tom, that issue just deals with the broader issue of corporate control of the media and so forth and so on. All right, let me get to Steve's question. It's an important question, Steve. As you know, we are struggling in this country with obesity. In some parts of the country, it is particularly high. Obesity leads to heart disease and to diabetes and other serious problems. I have a problem with having said that, I think the answer is to do a lot better job in educating people about good dietary habits and the significance of keeping themselves and their kids away from junk foods. I am not all that enthusiastic about telling people what they can eat and what they can't eat, but I think it is important for people on food stamps and everybody in this country to begin to understand the role of a diet in terms of our health. And we are making some progress, but I think we have a long way to go.
John in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening KABQ. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator. I was calling to ask about what the Senate is doing about the Attorney General's failure to enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Ah, John, good question. It's one that Tom and I have chatted about, I think, on numerous occasions. Look, the reality is that in America, in almost every economic sector of our society, you're seeing fewer and fewer large corporations controlling that sector. I could tell you probably the most egregious example of that is on Wall Street, where you have six financial institutions having assets equivalent to two-thirds of the GDP in America, writing half of the mortgages and two-thirds of the credit cards. And I think as Tom and I have chatted, if Teddy Roosevelt, a good Republican of 100 years ago, were alive today, he would have broken those babies up. So I think John is right. We need to be much more vigorous in antitrust activity. When we talk about, as we just did, the possible takeover of Time Warner by Comcast, I think that's kind of a no-brainer, frankly, for a dozen different reasons. But we have seen outrageous mergers in recent years, more and more concentration of ownership in our society. And John is absolutely right. We have not seen in for many, many, many years the kind of aggressive antitrust activity that we need, certainly including the Obama administration.
Alan, in Crown Point, Indiana, listening to WCPT, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator. I'm going to change my question from what I told the screener. Comcast is a large corporation, and it owns MSNBC, which is a left-wing station. So I hope you can do a lot to stop those things in the future.
Not quite sure I understand Alan's question.
I think he's concerned about corporate influence on media content. But,
right. You know, so. That is a huge issue. And the answer, I think, is to have a lot more diversity in media. Tom, you and I have chatted, and you always remind me what the answer is, but certainly well over 90% of talk radio in this country is kind of right-wing and extreme right-wing points of view. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think it's because of media consolidation.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with media consolidation, advertising, and so forth and so on. So, Alan, yes, the issue of corporate control of media is a huge issue.
Kathy in Valparaiso, Indiana. You're
good
on the
Arizona Center. Good afternoon, Tom, and good afternoon, Mr. Sanders. I have a question. What department in government would handle things with problems with climate control and solutions? Because I thought I had a good solution, because we're going to be flooding here in the Midwest, and now out east is going to be flooding. I come up with some way of running a pipeline to run the water out west where they're having a drought. But I don't know who to contact to discuss these things with.
For a start, Kathy, I would go to your senator. Your senators and your members of Congress, that would be a good place to begin.
Okay. Tim, in Elmhurst, Illinois, listening to WCPT. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question for the senator. I'd like to know where he stands on the National Rare Earth Cooperative Act of 2014 that was introduced by Senator Blunt and Senator Manchin.
Say that again,
The National Rare Earth Cooperative Act of 2014.
Is that to protect the very rare earths that are needed to make microchips and things? Is that what you're talking about?
To make all kinds of green energy. Actually, what it is to basically deal with the thorium issue that we have with rare earths all over the world.
So for clean energy. Okay.
Right. I have to apologize, Tim. I just am not familiar with that piece of legislation.
Okay. Bernie, we have just 1 minute until the end of the show. You want to wrap up? We have 2 minutes. I'm sorry.
Do you want to take another question, Tom?
If you'd like, sure. Edward, who is in Warren, Vermont, let's see, on WDEV, is on the air with you. Edward?
Hey, Bernie, how's it going?
Good.
So I have a question about the taxation of my dollar bill and how every dollar that I am paid, I'm taxed on income tax. And then when I go and spend my dollar, I'm taxed on any number of forms of sales tax. And then I'm curious as to how, as every person that has an income is taxed that way, why our entire country is in a state of debt perpetually.
Well, Edward, I think you've asked a number of questions. We are in a deficit and a state of debt because we spend more money than we take in. In recent history, the reason for that is during the Bush years, we went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan. We gave huge tax breaks to people who didn't need it. We passed the Medicare Part D program, all of which were not paid for. So when Clinton left office, we actually had a pretty good surplus. And there was a thought that the national debt would be wiped out in not so many years. But that was reversed under the Bush administration. In terms of taxation, Edward, all I can tell you is that when we are living as we are right now in a country which has massive income and wealth inequality, such that the top 1% are now earning about 95% of all new income generated in America, the kind of tax system we should have, in my view, would ask the wealthiest people in this country and the largest corporations to stop paying their fair share and take the burden off the middle class and working families.
Senator Sanders, thanks again for being with us this week.
Okay. Thank you.
Great talk. Thank you. And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. He's collecting your thoughts and stories on the Time Warner merger and that sort of thing.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. And Ed Yonka is with us. He's the Director of Communications and Public Policy at the ACLU of Illinois. By the way, after we're done talking with Ed, just a reminder, it's Anything Goes Friday. So if there's anything that you want to go off on, feel free. Ed, welcome to the program.
I just hope, Tom, that no one will want to go off on me.
No, they tend to do that to me. By the way, your website is ACLU-
It's great to be here.
Thank you. Your website is ACLU-IL, right, .org?
Correct.
Okay, great. So as in IL, like Illinois. Tell us what happened in Cook County today.
Well, this morning, a federal judge in Cook County issued a ruling in a case that we had brought along with our colleagues at Lambda Legal from the Midwest office here in Chicago, finding that the current Illinois ban on the freedom to marry for same-sex couples is unconstitutional. This is a case that we brought after the Illinois legislature passed a marriage equality law, which takes place on June 1st. But today the court found that the Cook County clerk, David Orr, had to begin issuing marriage licenses immediately. And I can tell you, having just been over at his office a few minutes ago, there are people waiting in line and they are getting their marriage licenses today.
Yeah, he's got to be slammed. Now, does this apply just to Cook County or just to him?
Well, here's the backdrop. The order to begin issuing them applies just to him. The broader reach of the ruling is that the current Illinois ban has been found unconstitutional. We believe that that should encourage clerks in other counties to recognize that they don't want to be in a position to enforce what is now an unconstitutional law, and we think that they ought to be in a position to go ahead and start issuing licenses. It's unclear at this hour whether or not clerks in other counties will, but the good news is that, you know, I think a significant percentage, if not a majority, of marriages that take place in Illinois every year take place in Cook County, and anyone can come to Cook County as of this moment and get a marriage license as long as they're married in Cook County.
Well, that's got to be great for the marriage business in Cook County over the next few months.
Our marriage planning friends are very happy right at this moment.
Yeah. So there's a really interesting backstory to this. This started out with a couple where one of the members of the couple had been fighting breast cancer for 17 years, as I recall, some long time, and she didn't have very long to live. And she and her partner wanted to get married before she died so that the benefits of marriage would accrue to her partner in terms of inheritance and visitation and all those other things before her last days, shall we say. Do I have that right?
Yeah, broader than that, in that, so what happened was, is after we passed the marriage legislation in Illinois on November 5th, and Governor Quinn signed it into law on, Governor Pat Quinn signed it into law on November 20th, because of the way that it was passed in a veto session or in a fall session, it doesn't become, the bill did not, or the law doesn't go into effect until June 1st.
Right.
You know, for people where one or the other couple have a serious illness, you know, that's a long time to wait, and in fact, it could mean that they are denied not just the benefits, but frankly, the dignity of marriage before they die.
Mm.
And in fact, one of the couples that we were able to secure relief for, under our request that let couples who had that situation marry immediately. One of the partners in one of those marriages just passed away last week. And so that was one element of this. But we also included in it the broader challenge to the marriage law, and that's what the judge ruled on this morning. We've had in place for a couple of weeks, for a few weeks, a system that where a doctor attested that one of the other couple might not live until June 1st, couples were able to secure licenses and get married, and a number of people did, a small number, but a number of people did. But this obviously broadens it out and allows couples to begin, marrying, as early as this weekend here in the state of Illinois.
Now, I read this decision this ruling, the memorandum of opinion and order in Brenda Lee and Lee Edwards, et cetera, on behalf of themselves, David Orr, and the defendant, the Cook County clerk. And basically, there was no defense presented, because the county, the state did not say, no, we want to assert our right to prevent you from getting married until June. The judge essentially, correct me if I'm wrong on this, the judge essentially said, nobody's fighting this thing, so it makes perfect sense, and the law violates the Constitution, so go for it. Shouldn't that then just, if that's accurate, or even close to accurate, doesn't that mean that if any other county clerk anywhere in the state of Illinois were to just go ahead and issue licenses right now and marriages were performed, because the state has not taken a position that they're going to fight this, that the probabilities of somebody's marriage being considered not valid are pretty close to zero?
First of all, your reading of the opinion and the order and the facts are correct. It was absolutely a wonderful thing that that David Orr, who's the clerk of Cook County, our Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, and others have never opposed the freedom to marry for same-sex couples. And actually, in an earlier state lawsuit we had brought, they had joined our side. So that has been one of the really wonderful things about this, and has been particularly, I think, courageous on their part, and really, recognizing where the dignity and the equity fall in this.
Yes.
But we believe that the other half of what you've said is precisely right, that any other clerk can read this decision and say that the judge has found the law unconstitutional, that the state has taken a position that is the appropriate finding, and that therefore they could begin and should begin to issue licenses in the other 101 Illinois counties as soon as possible. And so we're very, very hopeful that a number of them will do that. I think we recognize that may take a few days as people read through the decision and consult with their legal staff. But we're hopeful that will happen, in the next few days in counties across the state of Illinois.
Are you suggesting are you an attorney yet?
I am not.
Okay.
I just play one on the radio.
Okay. Well, in any case, so it sounds like that if any county clerks are listening, or anybody who wants to go talk to a county clerk in a hopefully very courteous fashion, other than Mr. Orr, that basically they can be reasonably assured that they're not going to, not only are they not going to get in any trouble here, but that they're doing the right thing. Legally as well as morally.
That's certainly what we believe, and we hope that a number of them, as I said, will step up in the next few days and do exactly that. I think we're very hopeful that is in fact.
But it's up to the discretion of the individual county clerks right now.
As of this moment, that's where we're at, and I think that a number of them have been watching and monitoring this litigation, the legislation in our state capitol in the fall, the earlier state suit. So I think that they have a good background in this. I think they've had a lot of grounding in this, and I think they'll be in a place where they'll be able to make a decision.
Right. And now this is a federal court, U.S. District Court. You're batting 1,000 here. I mean, the district court, federal court after federal court across the United States has been knocking down these bans on same-sex marriage.
If if you read that, you said you read the opinion this
yes.
morning, and one of the things that I thought was really wonderful was that the judge, you know, pointed out that the question really has moved to, not from why or why should people wait to why not.
Exactly.
She quoted Dr. Martin Luther King as saying, you know, that the time is always ripe to do what's right. And that is really the moment we've reached all across the country on this issue.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Thanks so much for being with us, Ed.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That's Ed Yonke. He's the Director of Communications and Public Policy with the ACLU of Illinois. Their website is aclu-il.org. We'll be back. It's Anything Goes Friday. And welcome back, John, in Everett, Washington, listening on KBCS, which I believe is doing a fundraising drive this week. So please pitch in if they are. John, what's up?
Well, I just want to talk about health care for a moment. Mm-hmm. We have something in this country that we call basic education, where people pay taxes and you get basic education. And if you want a premium education, well, then you have the money and you send your kid to private school or you get a scholarship. I have not heard any discussion from any politicians, any medical professionals, any pundits about applying that model to healthcare.
Well, that was Ted Kennedy's thing. Ted Kennedy used to talk about that all the time, that there should be a baseline of healthcare available to every person in this country, and it should be a baseline of healthcare that is fully adequate to meet the needs of any person. And that should be considered a right and not a privilege. And that, above that, if somebody wants, a single bed in the hospital rather than sharing a room with somebody, or if somebody wants to have catered meals, let them pay for it or let them buy insurance for it. But there needs to be a baseline of insurance that's considered a right. I mean, Ted Kennedy, I'm not quoting him word for word or anything close to it, but that was the basis of his battle with Richard Nixon in 1973 when Nixon proposed what is now a program that's almost identical to Obamacare.
Yeah, and I'm compassionate, but I wouldn't put a new transmission in a car that had 280,000 miles.
Right.
And I think that if you're going to be 88 years old and you want a heart bypass or a heart transplant or any of these things that cost hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, that you should buy your own insurance to do that and allow basic health care to get to the people who need it, particularly preventative care for children and women, things of that sort, that could actually save money down the road.
Well, the whole issue of basic health care I think has been long ago litigated by our insurance companies. I doubt you would find an insurance company right now that would pay for a heart transplant for an 88-year-old.
Well, all I know is, my mom's 90. I love her. And she's in the doctor every few days. And, and it costs quite a lot of money. And fortunately, she's well insured. But by the same token,
John, we don't want to get to that point where it's like put the old people on the iceberg and float it out.
I get that. But I just like to see some principles applied to how we administer healthcare.
Yeah.
That should be
the discussion that we should be having as a country. Instead of, should the health insurance companies be able to take 20 or 25% skim off the top to pay for the gold faucets and the executive washrooms and the CEO bonuses and stock options, we should be having a conversation about what are the standards of care that we provide in this country. What falls within the realm that we call right, and then what falls outside of that in the realm that we call privilege. As you correctly point out, we've done with education, and I think we've done rather poorly in some areas. We do quite well in other areas, physical areas of the country, geographic areas of the country. And we need to clean up our education, but we need to do the same thing with healthcare. John, good point. Thank you for the call. Ben, thanks for listening to KBCS. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. It's 20 minutes past the hour, and Morris in Long Beach, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Morris, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Professor. In recognition of Black History Month, I'd like to refer the listeners and the students to Martin Luther King's Ten Commandments on the Vietnam War. Uh-huh. They were published in the Los Angeles Sentinel newspaper celebrating Dr. King's birthday last month. And the notes that were found in his pockets, these notes were found in his pocket after his assassination on April the 4th. But, Professor, if you get a moment, go back to an Amy Goodman, we're going to call it a debate between Mr. Stuart Baker, who's the former general counsel for the National Security Agency, and Mr. Daniel Ellsberg. You know who Mr. Ellsberg is.
Yes.
You really got to listen to that debate. I know you don't have time to talk too much about it now, but I would tell all the listeners, if you can, go to Democracy Now! And listen to the debate between Mr. Stuart Baker.
Was this recent?
And Mr. Daniel Ellsberg.
Was this in the last few days?
Yes, sir. I believe it was last Friday. Mm-hmm. And it kind of sent chills up my spine just a little bit. And mm-hmm. I didn't know if I was overreacting. I thought I'd let somebody, you know, come to their own conclusion.
Yeah.
But how do you sign a promise of non-disclosure? And this is what some of our public officials are doing.
Right.
And I won't put any names out there. I'll let you go to Democracy Now! And hear it for yourself, because
okay.
55 million people are listening to me right now, and I don't want to be the one to disclose this.
Yeah.
But please go to that interview. But my question is, how do you sign a promise of non-disclosure? You're a public official, allegedly, serving the public. And I'm in agreement with what Mr. Ellsberg said. The oversight is very weak, and it's a broken-down system.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I know Dan Ellsberg, and he's been on this program many times over the years, and a good man. And yeah, I'm very concerned about the Fourth Amendment, our rights under the Fourth Amendment, and frankly, the First Amendment, our right of association. Arguably, our right of free speech too, but I think more importantly, our right of association is being violated by the NSA in their metadata. Because I mean, what the metadata is doing is determining with whom you are associating. That's all it does. Who is this person talking to? And they brag about, you know, we're not gathering the contents of it. We're just figuring out who they're talking to. Well, excuse me. The First Amendment guarantees us the right to free association, unencumbered by government, modulated. What's the appropriate word? There's probably many of them, but in any case, by government. And so I think that both our Fourth Amendment rights to privacy and our First Amendment rights to free association are being trampled upon by not just the NSA, but more importantly, I wouldn't say it's a greater concern, but another concern that I have is that it's, you know, 70% of it's private corporations who are gathering this information, and they don't have internal. You know, obviously the NSA isn't following the rules in all cases, but at least there are rules that allow, for example, whistleblowers that don't apply to private for-profit corporations, and that concerns me too. But Morris, I can't speak to the exact detail that you're talking about because I haven't seen the debate. So I hope my comments aren't too off the mark.
No, you're right on the money. The problem that I saw here was, you know, I'm the campaign manager for Mr. Snowden, and my candidate was villainized for not following protocol. Well, he did try to follow protocol, but when he saw what happened to some of the other fellows when they went to complain about compromising the Constitution and amendments and things like that, when he saw one fellow by the name of Mr. Benny, who was a paraplegic, he's in the shower, right? This is not a movie. He opens up the door, and there's an FBI agent pointing a gun at his head.
Whoa.
And you have a Mr. Tom Drake, I think I have his name correct, a good fellow.
Yeah, Tom Drake. He's a whistleblower.
But they broke him.
Yeah. Wow.
He's defending himself. So when Mr. Snowden saw that, he realized he had to go someplace where they, too, had the atomic bomb.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that analysis. I think that there are not a lot of countries in the world that the United States can't intimidate. And right now, Russia is one of the few. And Ed Snowden, in my mind, is a patriot. And I think history is going to treat him as a patriot. And, you know, we'll see how all this shakes out. So, Morris, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for calling in. How are we doing? Oh, we're on the air right now. Yeah. Okay. Susan, we got 2 minutes. Susan in Wana, Washington. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, Tom, I was going to give you a choice again of chemistry, politics, or obscure, unknown laws that have already been passed, and I chose the laws that have been passed.
Okay. Jeopardy kinds.
Basically.
Slot.
The aggrandization of both parties is really what is annoying me, but I had spoke to Danielle several weeks ago about something known as the Tabarrok Act and also the Hatch-Waxman Act, when you were saying that you really liked Senator Waxman.
Congressman Henry Waxman. Yeah. There are some areas where I disagree with him really aggressively, like his FDA stuff. He wants to regulate herbs and herbal supplements.
Exactly, FDA. But again, Chuck Schumer, another lovely senator, and when Chuck Schumer would give banking tips or take someone out of the FDA arena and utilize them in the banking industry, it has to do with FTC, SEC laws. And if you read it over, what you're going to discover is that it's whatever the market will bear. So like these cancer drugs that your friend Mike Papantonio was talking about, that's why they are 6,000 to beyond 15,000 on the drug I was on.
Yeah.
And
Louise was on a drug that cost $100,000, you know, for the course of treatment.
I was on one, yeah.
It's mind-boggling. If we hadn't had insurance, it would have broken us.
Do you know the one fellow I was going to ask you, Art Pope?
Yeah. Yeah, he's the very wealthy guy in North Carolina that is now the budget director for North Carolina, but has bankrolled a lot of the right-wing activity in the Republican Party in that state. Susan, we're out of time, but thanks for the call and thanks for your comments. It's 28 minutes past the hour. We will be back with Anything Goes Friday. What's on your mind today? Seen a flying saucer lately? Actually, have you seen Netflix lately? Maybe not.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
At least for people with Verizon Fios, you're more likely to see a flying saucer than to see Netflix in high def. President's Week was last week, wasn't it? Oh, it's this week? Cool. Oh, it was Monday. Boy, I literally, the other day, I was looking at something going, is it 2013 or 2014? Of course, I think a lot of people do that the first couple months of the year, but I have my whole entire life, I've been so bad with time. I can, and it's so funny because I can remember, you know, what month and year, you know, James Madison wrote a letter to Thomas Jefferson, but I can't tell you what year I live in. I guess our brains are all wired uniquely, and mine is wired really weird. Ted Cruz, speaking of really weird. And then I'm going to pick up your calls. It is Anything Goes Friday, but just a couple things I got to share with you here. And just a heads up at the top of the hour, we are going to, in the next hour, we're going to be talking about net neutrality and this Comcast merger and all this kind of stuff. But Ted Cruz, the city of Sarasota, Florida, well, not the city, actually, the Sarasota County Republican Party, threw a gig for Ted Cruz. And it was $500 a person for the VIP fundraiser, and then there was a private dinner afterwards that was $5,000 a couple. And at that event, Ted Cruz was awarded the Statesman of the Year Award. In fact, the headline is, Ted Cruz electrifies Sarasota as he accepts Statesman of the Year Award. The founders are rolling over in their graves. Scott Walker. Page 1,321 of Walker Docs 2 has Chief of Staff, Scott Walker's Chief of Staff, Keith Gilks, ordering three people to bring friends who can help with a caging effort. Caging is illegal. Caging is where you send out letters to people, saying pretty much anything. And if the letter bounces back, if they don't send back something, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to do it. But basically, if there's any indication that that person doesn't live at that address, then you strike them off the voting rolls. And so here's the email says, literally, we need cagers for this Saturday. We will have plenty to get caught up on. October 21, 2010 email. Please bring friends who are detail-oriented and can put in some solid hours. I mean, it just doesn't get more corrupt than that. The Republican Party, since the 1970s, I believe, has been under a court order preventing them from participating, engaging in caging. Scott Walker. breaking the law. Gee, what a surprise. Netflix confirms that streaming speeds on major ISPs have fallen by an average of 14% in just the last 30 days. The wars have begun. They haven't even started to screw the consumers, other than that, you know, you're screwed if you're watching Netflix. But, you know, they just wait until they roll out the new pricing structure. Oh, you want to watch Netflix? Well, that's an extra $10 a month. You know, you stream content. Oh, you know, that it's they're going to figure this out. And finally, and Shane O pointed this out to me. I want to give him credit for that. Shane Farnan, who's our associate producer here and resident law school graduate and chief Supreme Court reporter for the Talk Radio News Service, pointed out that this, you know, I have gone off on judicial review for years and years and years, and I'm in my spare time writing a book about it. And although I do mention it briefly in my book, Unequal Protection. And judicial review is where the courts, and typically it's the Supreme Court, but it has over history been other various courts, and usually federal courts, puts themselves above the legislature and the executive. So the third among equals, the least significant branch of government, the least powerful branch of government, asserts that they have the power to knock down laws passed by Congress and signed into law by the president or by a governor. In this case in Illinois, this judge, I believe, and if there are any lawyers listening who want to take me on this, I would, or, you know, either contradict me or agree with me. I would love to hear your opinion. Is that this judge did judicial review the right way, the way that I would argue the founders intended it to be done. You will find an argument made both for and against judicial review in the Federalist Papers in the early 80s that Hamilton wrote, Federalist 81, 82, 83, 84. You will find Alexander Hamilton back in 1788 making arguments in favor of and against judicial review. Or it was late 1787, actually, I think. But by the time he got to the 80s, it might have been early 88. But whatever. The argument, but the judicial review in this case, what this judge did is instead of saying, and he did quote Dr. Martin Luther King here, which is brilliant. Instead of saying, I am striking down this law for the entire state of Illinois, I am blowing out of the water what a previous governor had done and previous legislatures had done. This judge said, in this case, with this defendant and these plaintiffs, I am finding unconstitutionality. Now, the rest of y'all, that would be all the other county clerks in the state of Illinois, the rest of you all can just do whatever you think is right based on my decision, or you can ignore my decision, because I'm just a judge. I have judicial review over the case in front of me, but not over the law itself. And in that regard, if my understanding of this is correct, and I've been referring to the judge in the male pronoun, it's actually a woman, Judge Sharon Johnson Coleman. My apologies to Judge Coleman. I just found it on the first page here. This seems to me like just a brilliant application of judicial review. The right way to do it. Because she starts out pointing out that, you know, as of June, the ban on same-sex couple marriage is gone. And there have been a few cases where somebody was dying and they've granted a permission to get married even before the ban is gone in June. And then the judge writes in the finding, since the parties agree that marriage is a fundamental right of, this parties being both the plaintiffs and the defendants, since the parties agree that marriage is a fundamental right available to all individuals and should not be denied, the focus in this case shifts from the, quote, we can't wait, close quote, for terminally ill individuals, to the, quote, why should we wait, close quote, for all gay and lesbian couples that want to marry. To paraphrase Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the time is always ripe to do right. And then she, from his Why Can't We Wait 1964 speech. Brilliant. So, anyway, my thoughts on that. Let's pick up your thoughts on a whole variety of things. Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey, you wanted to talk about solar energy?
Yes, Tom. I'd like to tell you another way to to use solar that will save us a lot of fossil fuels and help us preserve our water, mm-hmm. fresh water, because, as you know, coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear are second only to agriculture in their daily uses of our freshwater resources.
Yes, they use more water than we drink.
That's right. And we need that water now. We're in a different world. And this would be fiber optic indoor lighting. If you Google the words fiber optic indoor lighting, fiber optics are it's basically a flexible, transparent fiber made of high-quality extruded glass or plastic, and it's slightly thicker than a human hair.
Yeah, everybody's seen these things around Christmas time. They have these little miniature things that sort of look like an explosion of little plastic things coming, you know, in the colors, and it's like for Christmas trees they do them, and sometimes they're just, you know, the kind of exotic, modern, whatever.
Yes, and they also use, like, cable companies use fiber optic cables.
Sure,
and
to transmit data at the speed of light, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So this, what they do is there's companies now, if you Google fiber optic indoor lighting, there's companies that actually transport light off the rooftop of buildings. They literally pipe it like you pipe water. They pipe the light down into the rooms, and they mix it with, if it's a dark day, they'll bring in less light, so you'll use the incandescent and the fluorescent lighting. But on a bright day, you can have, like, full-spectrum outdoor lighting indoors. It's much healthier. People seem to respond to it much better. And if you think of it on a national scale, that would save a tremendous amount of electricity and thereby mm-hmm. saving a lot of water. And
yeah.
Sun.
The only downside is it only works when the sun's out. But, yes.
Yeah.
And in fact, back when we lived in Atlanta years ago, I mean, this was a couple of decades ago, we installed in one of our bathrooms, it wasn't fiber, it was just a tube. But it was a light at the top, you know, a little dome at the top, and then the light would come down through this tube and it illuminated what looked like the top of a light bulb at the bottom. And it would light up the bathroom during the daytime. And people would duct light into their bedrooms and things, you know, right through the roof. And it was cool stuff. Harvey, it can be done. Thanks a lot for the call. Catherine in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Catherine.
Hi. A couple things. I wanted to talk about Tor, the sourcing, how you can be anonymous. But I want to give you three quick updates on Wisconsin. One is that you can download all the docs for Walker on the Progressive Magazine's website.
So okay.
Thousands of pages. But
yep.
You can go through it and you could help supply things. And even if you're not from Wisconsin, it would be a help because you can go to racism or sexism or
great.
Whatever
okay.
you're
thinking. So that's number one. What's number two?
Number two is that the Solidarity Sing-Along is still fighting, and there is something called the First Amendment Fund.org.
Okay.
One judge in a bunch of the cases asked the state for a detailed monetary report versus the benefit to Wisconsin for going through 400 jury trials.
Hmm.
So that's still
interesting.
Going on.
Catherine, we're going to have to pick up number three another time, but thank you for the call. I'm sorry we're out of time. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Fiber optic solar, I just Googled it like Harvey suggested. Actually, DuckDuckGo did. Cool. Welcome back. Dave, Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. You wanted to talk about Scott Walker?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I read your book, by the way, and it was great.
Which one?
I gave it to a friend. The crash of 2016.
Yeah, thank you.
And, yeah, anyway, the thing about Scott Walker, you know, just the thought of him even being a candidate for president is kind of scary, but I just wanted to take you back to, I was one of the million signers of the petition to get him recalled, and one of the reasons he survived that, but I think one of the reasons was he outspent Tom Barrett like 6-1, and over half of his money came from out of state, which only exemplifies the, you know, the role of big money in politics. And I think that's one of the factors behind all of our problems. I mean, we're not going to solve anything until we get that taken care of.
I think, you know, Scott Walker, John Kasich, Mike Pence, arguably Rick Scott and who's the guy in Michigan? Rick Snyder, the two Ricks. They have an endogenous money or an indigenous money. Rick Scott is a multimillionaire from, you know, one of the largest Medicaid frauds in the history of America. And Rick Snyder has a billionaire family, the Amway, you know, family behind him in Michigan. But a lot of these other guys, Walker and Pence and Kasich and others, they're great examples of how outside money has caused states that would typically be Democratic if it was just local money being spent to become Republican.
Yeah. Well, I think you probably know that Koch Industries was one of the major contributors, too.
Yeah. No, I mean, remember when somebody punked Scott Walker by calling up and saying, "Hi, it's David Koch. Just want to say you're doing a great job." And he's like,
"Yeah, that was great. It was all funny,
Mr. Koch."
Except that it was so. What they were talking about was scary. You know?
Yeah, yeah. He was like, "Mr. Koch, I can't wait to kiss your shoes." It's like, you know,
yeah, right.
It was amazing. Anyhow, Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. I agree. Scott Walker for president is scary. Pierce in South Orange, New Jersey, watching on YouTube. You had a question about ADHD meds. Pierce, you are on the air. Pierce is watching his computer, apparently, not listening to his telephone. You got to listen to your telephone, Pierce. But it says that you have a question about my stance on ADHD medication, so I'll tell you my thoughts on ADHD medication. I'm broadly opposed to the use of ADHD medications. I think most people who are diagnosed with ADHD actually are people who are... Their life circumstances are inappropriate. They are people who are biologically wired as hunters, and they're trying to be farmers. Our school system is hostile to people who are wired as ADHD. There are some schools that are not. Steiner schools, Waldorf schools are not hostile to such kids. That said, there is a small subset of people who are confronting such neurological challenges or such world challenges around them that they find some value in some of these medications. I'm not one of these no never folks, but I think that we are wildly over medicating our population, just wildly over medicating. And my last book on this topic is called The Edison Gene. And if you really want to dig into my thoughts on this, the genetics of it, and the cultural aspect of it, and the educational aspect of it, it's all right there. Thanks a lot. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with Bob Ney. He's with the Talk Radio News Service, former congressman and author of the book Sideswiped. If you want to know what's going on in Washington, D.C., get the to your local bookstore or your online bookseller and look up Bob Ney's Sideswiped. Check it out. Brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com, by the way, Ellen Ratner's charity. Bob, welcome.
And I must applaud you on the Edison gene, which I got a copy of yours a few years back.
Oh, well, thank you. So what's going on in the world today?
Well, I think the big news, of course, the news in the Ukraine of the agreement signed, and the parliament has acted swiftly to get rid of the interior minister, diminish some of the powers of the president, and reach out to the opposition. So possibly something which I really didn't think would happen maybe is coming to some type of agreement.
Yeah.
In Washington, though, very fascinating. The White House quote leaks, which we know nothing's really leaked unless it wants to be in most cases. But with the budget, the president is saying, you know, we've been preoccupied with austerity, and now we're going to spend $54 billion in certain domestic areas. But the important part is the president has abandoned the chained index, price index, which is a fancy word for really hurting people on Social Security because of the way they look at items that are deemed to be inflationary. You know, and if computers go down, for example, they wouldn't give a cost of living increase to seniors. So this, I think the fact that the president has abandoned that is going to say a lot, and I would be fascinated to see the next move that the Republicans would try to make on that.
Yeah, this is a fascinating thing. This is something that came out of Simpson and Bowles, two guys who are multimillionaires from their consulting and whatnot with corporations. And the theory behind the chain CPI was that you chain the consumer price index to people's behavior. So if people are eating steak, if seniors are eating steak and steak is $4 a pound and I have no idea what steak sells for. I haven't eaten meat since I was 16. But let's say it's $4 a pound, and the price goes up to $4.50 a pound. Those people say, I can't eat steak anymore. I'm going to go to hamburger, which is now $3 a pound. So instead of indexing for inflation on the price of steak, it would simply start measuring the price of hamburger. If hamburger starts going up and they go to chicken, then it would measure chicken. If chicken goes up and they go to cat food, they would start measuring cat food, and which is why some people refer to Simpson Bowles as the Cat Food Commission. And the president proposed this a year ago, and this year he said, no, I'm not going to propose it. God bless him. I mean, and he said no, I think, in large part because Bernie Sanders and a bunch of good progressives in the Senate got in his face.
Well, yes, and Bernie Sanders really needs a lot of credit. I mean, I can go back historically to when he tried to do something about this, you know, over 14 years ago, and they kept on this issue because the president was yielding to, you know, the grand bargain with Speaker Boehner at one point in time is giving this as sort of a leaf to the conservatives who,
right,
for some reason, want this.
Right. Well, they want it because they want to kill Social Security. They want us all to be in the hands of Wall Street, not in the hands of government.
Yes, and the private concerns. So I think this was a large step. And also the president's coming out and saying, look, you know, there's not going to be a willingness to deal with me, so I have a vision, and here's what I'm going to do. And some people would say, well, that's playing to the base. Well, it's playing to the base. People play to their base, but on top of it, I think it's the president saying, look, I'm just not going through this year.
Yeah, I'm going to establish my principles. Now, that, of course, means that this budget is dead on arrival. But any, you know, let's be honest, any budget that this president proposed, even if he was willing to meet the Republicans halfway and say, I'll agree with you, we'll cut Social Security, we'll even privatize Medicare, the Republicans still would have said no.
Well, that's right. And so either way, so he's putting out his vision of what he wants to do with the budget. And the one other huge issue, which may not be big anymore after I think the commission is going to yield, the Federal Communications Commission was scheduling a spring hearing, and it would be down in Columbia, South Carolina, and their purpose would be the Federal Communications Commission would go down there, and they would ask journalists and station owners in Columbia, South Carolina, about their philosophy for covering the news and the way they select stories. This, of course, generated a ton of controversy that they were going to try to, quote, put the clock backwards and micromanage who says what and how they say it, sort of the fairness doctrine concept.
The Republican fantasy of the fairness doctrine. The fairness doctrine itself just mandated news coverage, basically.
That's correct, that somebody actually kept track of that was what they say. So that was a large controversy, but I think that probably the commission may do a little bit of backtracking on it.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a shame. They should have a spine. On the other hand, Tom Wheeler, the head of the FCC, made $19.5 million as a consultant to big telco companies and the communications industry. So,
hard chunk of change.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of
communicating.
Anyhow, what else is going on in the world, Bob?
Well, the other interesting, and Will technology solve gun issues? I don't know, but Senator Ed Markey, a Democratic member from Massachusetts, is going to introduce a bill that would require new handguns to be outfitted with what they call personalization technology within 2 years, and older guns to be retrofitted so that you can't fire that gun unless you are who you are, so if the gun's stolen. And this may not have light of day chance, but I would just say, I think Senator Markey's pointing out that, you know, technology may be a key down the road as to what happens.
I thought this was, where they use a laser and they micro carve basically a serial number into the firing pin so that when you fire a bullet, your serial number gets basically engraved into the firing pin on, I forget what it's called, that little thing in the middle of the bullet, you know, that, and so the police can see who, you know, what gun that shell casing came out of, as opposed to something that would prevent you from firing somebody else's gun.
Well, this one, what Senator Markey has, actually would prevent someone from firing a gun they take from you, steal from you.
How do they do that?
They actually had something like this years ago. It was a more crude type of lock that went onto a gun from your wrist. This one is this was electronic chip technology.
Oh, interesting. So it's like you put in a code like to unlock your phone kind of thing?
Yes, and then you've got something on your wrist and so they can't actually take your gun, or a child couldn't get a gun and accidentally fire.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting.
Yes.
Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Anything Goes Friday, although first I want to get Craig Aaron in here and talk about what's going on with this whole... Actually, there's two pieces to this. Number one, the Comcast-Time Warner cable merger. And number two, this net neutrality. Actually, three pieces. I guess the FCC saying that they're going to rewrite their net neutrality rules. FCC headed up by Mr. Thomas Wheeler. Former partner, Core Capital Partners, and it goes through. I've got an entire page here of all the companies that this guy has been on the board of or has lobbied for, and the $19 million he made doing it before he became the head of the FCC, which is rather mind-boggling. Craig Aaron, the CEO and president of Free Press, freepress.net. Craig, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me back, Tom. Always a pleasure.
So, Netflix is saying that they're seeing a 14% over the last 30 days decrease in their throughput speed to their customers. One of the people who works here on this program has Verizon Fios at home, and it has just in the last 30 days, this is the super expensive, super high speed, 100 MIPS service. It has gotten so bad that Netflix shows are stuttering now for this person. I've noticed in the last month on two different ISPs, consumer ISPs that I have at home, that when I try to stream or get large quantities of content, things are slowing down. And then when I go to a VPN, that they're actually shutting me down. What the hell's going on out there in the internet?
Well, there's a lot of shady activity going on deep in the internet infrastructure in places it's very hard for the average consumer to see. And since these companies very often won't talk about what's going on, we don't know exactly what's going on, but it seems pretty clear that's what's happening is at the level of what's been known as peering. So this is the backbone of the internet where big pipes from the company that carry traffic for companies like Netflix or Amazon meet up with the big pipes that take all that traffic to your home from places like Verizon and Comcast. And increasingly, indications are, although a lot of this is buried in these non-disclosure engineering agreements, but the indications are that the cable companies and the phone companies like Verizon that offer a television product are really trying to get these other companies to pay them more to carry their traffic. And when they won't do it, they're not opening up as much space. They're not opening up the ports in the internet. It's sort of like if you were going to Costco and you paid your $50 to get your Costco card and you expected to be able to buy, a bushel of apples, and they said, oh, sorry, we don't have apples anymore. They wouldn't fit into our loading dock. If you imagine that scenario, that's kind of what's happening on the internet. And of course, the important thing to remember here is you as an internet customer of one of these companies like Comcast or Verizon are already paying. You're already paying them your $80, $90, $100 a month because you want to watch Netflix, because you want to watch these other services, because you want to run your business. And it shouldn't be a situation where they can double dip and charge twice. They don't actually have a capacity problem. They're just trying to exploit their role as gatekeepers to make even more money.
Right. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, which is where they come to me and they say, oh, you've got our basic $80 a month plan. If you want to watch streaming video, that's an extra $10 a month. If you want to watch a porn site, that's an extra $20 a month. If you want to, visit the news sites over at the New York Times or Financial Times or Huffington Post, that's an extra $5 a month. If you want, the menu like they have on their cable systems.
Well, that's just it, Tom. That's the model. That's their model. That's their vision for the future of the internet. Now, that's never the way the internet has worked. That's not what has made the internet, such an unrivaled place for free speech and democratic right. participation and economic innovation. But if you're a cable company, that's a model you're very, very familiar with. You like an internet where you get to pick and choose the channels for people, where you get to decide which sites and services get the fastest speeds, which are slowed down, which work, and which don't load at all. That is a model they like.
Okay, so here we have the president and chief executive officer of cellular telecommunications and of the cellular telecommunications and internet association, the CTIA, from 1992 to 2004. This guy was the president and CEO of the trade industry group that was representing these ISPs and whatnot. He is now the head of the FCC, Tom Wheeler. Could that have something to do with the fact that with the reason why the FCC won't simply declare that ISPs are common carriers like phone companies are?
I guess it's somewhat too early to judge, but I think you certainly can draw the connections. And, Tom Wheeler, before he was the head of the cell phone industry lobby several decades ago, he was the head of the cable industry lobby. So this is a guy who goes way back in that regard. But I think it's, maybe a little more complicated than that, and the problems run even deeper than Tom Wheeler into really the whole way that Washington makes media and telecom policy. And they are gripped in what I would call a can't-do attitude when it comes to doing things that millions and millions of Americans, the vast majority of Americans, want to see happen. They just want to be protected. They just want to go online and have choices.
Right.
And yet Washington has become paralyzed because of the lobbying and influence industry that Tom Wheeler used to be part of from taking any of these steps. And they are, at the FCC, almost afraid of their own shadow. I mean, they took a big loss in court a couple weeks ago. They're trying to pretend it was actually a victory. They're trying to paste together the shreds of authority that was left to them in this decision instead of actually taking the kind of decisive action that we need to see at the FCC. So they have basically kicked the can down the road again. And even though so many Americans, millions and millions, have been demanding net neutrality, demanding they protect the free and open internet, they continue to take a very circuitous route, very weak demonstration of their power. And the companies, they smell the fear. And so they're being very aggressive in what they're doing, trying to keep the FCC from doing what most of us need them to do, which is actually look out for us, actually protect us online from the abuse of these big corporations. So the fight is far from over, but it was certainly discouraging to see the FCC, instead of moving to do what we told them to do, which is reclassify broadband under the law, treat it as what it obviously is, a telecommunications and transmission service. Everybody understands that's what it is and that it needs to be treated differently from websites. But again, they're studying it. They're doing this extended process. And unfortunately, that's certainly not good news for the future of the internet.
Well, and this comes back to the power of big money in Washington, D.C., which gets us back to the Supreme Court discovering in the Buckley case that the First Amendment protects money and that corporations are protected. And then in the First National Bank versus Bilotti case 2 years later, discovering that the 14th Amendment protects corporations, and then bringing all that together, of course, in Citizens United. This is craziness.
And I think it plays out in the media telecom world in ways that people think of, oh, oil companies and tobacco companies. But look, these guys in the cable and phone world spend as much as any of those guys when it comes to influence in Washington. And the revolving door spins nowhere quite like it does at the FCC, where you've got, the current chairman of the FCC used to be the top cable lobbyist. The top cable lobbyist used to be chairman of the FCC. And that's what we're going up against every day.
Right. Right. Michael Powell. Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Son of Colin Powell. He used to be the head of the FCC. Now he's the head cable lobbyist. It's nuts. It should be illegal. It should be a crime. But it's not. So, Craig, we have a minute left. What do we do? The FCC is not elected. How do we influence them?
Well, we ought to organize, Tom. We've seen it again and again and again, the fight against SOPA-PIPA, even making net neutrality an issue, the pushback against unchecked spying and surveillance. When millions and millions of Americans get together, when they put pressure on an agency like the FCC that is not used to being in the public eye, they can get good results. And we can still have that happen here. But it's going to take some unprecedented organizing, involvement, pressure on Capitol Hill, maybe direct action around the FCC. It's an organizing problem. It's a political problem. We have to treat it like that, and, you know, we have to raise hell.
Yeah, and you guys are right at the center of that, and people can participate in that by going to freepress.net. Freepress.net. Craig Aaron, the president and CEO of Free Press. Craig, keep up the great work, my friend.
Thanks, Tom. Always appreciate the opportunity.
My pleasure. Great to have you with us. We'll be back. It's Anything Goes Friday, but there are some things that are worth talking about, how they're going. That's certainly one of them. But we'll be back with your phone calls on whatever topic you'd like to cover as well. I've got a few others.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This revolving door in Washington, D.C. is something that, you know, another thing to put on the list when you contact your member of Congress or you show up at a town hall meeting. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I am just astounded. Josh Marshall over at Talking Points Memo has some of the lyrics from some Ted Nugent songs. And I had no idea. I will share those with you in a minute. John just vanished. Mary Jo, Mary Jo, let me put you on hold. I'm going to come back to you in just a second. Your radio station's at a commercial break right now. Sue in Morgan, Pennsylvania. Sue, we already have death panels. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi, Tom. By the way, don't apologize for your brain. I've told you so many times how great it is.
Well, thank you.
I want a slice if you donate it, remember?
Okay.
We already have a death panel in the U.S. medical system. We're 37th in outcome behind Slovenia. You report that.
Yes.
Our infant mortality rate is among the worst in the whole world.
Well, among the worst in the developed world.
I'm sorry. That's what I had written down, but didn't say it. The medical colleges and CME, continuing medical education, is funded by the pharmaceutical industry.
Yep.
And
in the control of the doctor's lobby, they get to decide how many people can go to medical school. And thus, you know.
I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And if you remember, I'm the one who... whose husband I diagnosed with a stroke. When I called 911, they waited 16 hours to do a test. The protocol's 42 minutes.
Wow.
They had him alive artificially. They wanted to take off the back of his skull. They were keeping him alive artificially. They kept him alive so that they up to 48 hours so they could be paid for 2 days. They charged $92,000 to murder him. So it's already going on. We don't have to wait for the death panels. They're here.
Yeah, yeah. In the nature of the poor quality of care that we have, the poor oversight, and the profit motive at the core of everything. Sue, thank you for calling and sharing your story. It's a tough one, but it's always good to hear from you. Harold in Tucson, Arizona. Harold, you wanted to talk about Ellsberg and Baker?
Yeah. I watched the debate last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to warn anybody that watches it, if you like to yell at the TV, you will be yelling at the TV when you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is Mr. Baker, if you watch the debate, basically was filibustering Mr. Ellsberg about half the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to stop him. And Amy Goodman at one point had to cut off his mic in order to get Mr. Ellsberg to say his piece.
Wow.
So I'm saying it is not the easiest debate to watch.
Right.
So, Mr. Ellsberg, at the end of the debate, you can see he was flustered, or I don't know what would, when you're under a lot of stress.
Yeah, no, I understand, and I can imagine. I think they teach that over at Fox News or something. I don't know. I get these people on my show who have been on Fox a lot, and they just think that the answer to everything is to prevent the other person from speaking. It's amazing. Harold, I'm going to have to check it out. I can't do it while I'm on the air, but thanks for the confirmation that Ellsberg-Baker debate over at Amy Goodman's program is worth tracking down. I'm going to. We'll be back. Defending America from the Weapons of Mass Deception. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. Mary Jo in Minneapolis, listening on AM 950. Hey, Mary Jo, what's up?
Hi. Tom, you often say that you have the smartest listeners in the world. So I'm appealing to the inventors of the listeners to come up with a way, if they could, to get snow off of our solar panels, because those of us who live in the Midwest are really suffering from too much snow. I mean, I have 24 panels that I actually bought from Solar World that advertises on your show, but last year I was able to get 95% of my electrical needs from the panels. But this year we've had so much snow. If I don't get the snow off right away, it turns to ice and I just can't get it off.
Hmm.
And yesterday I spent 2 hours trying to get the snow off. I didn't quite get it all off. But then today we have 8 more inches of snow on top.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if someone could possibly come up with, you know, like a programmable you know, how they have these robotic vacuum cleaners.
Well,
system.
What I had this conversation when we lived in Vermont. Now, this was a decade ago, so I have no idea if this technology is, it's probably gone leaps and bounds ahead. But we had a conversation with a solar contractor about putting panels on a house that we had. And, you know, and I said, you know, what happens when they get covered with snow? And his comment was that you can get this heating tape that they use on pipes, and you run the heating tape around the solar panels, and you know, and between them and like that, and it's fairly low current, and you turn it on. I mean, you manually turn it on and heat it up to the point where it melts the snow off. Now, it wouldn't work real well if you're at 10 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. But, you know, if you're typically when it snows, you're within 10 degrees of 32 degrees. You know,
we've been minus 14, minus 17.
Yeah, but not when it's snowing. Or am I wrong?
Oh.
I mean, usually when it snows, the snow, you know, the moisture coming out of the sky warms the air to the point where you're within 10 degrees of the freezing temperature of water. And then after it snows, then it gets really, really cold.
I'll call Solar World and see what they're
doing. Yeah, ask them, you know, and then report back to me. I'm also surprised that, it may well be that somebody is already making solar panels that have, you know, little heating elements built into them that are sort of like those wires on the back of your, back window in your car, you know, where you flip it on and it. Now, this is resistive heating, so they're going to consume a lot of electricity. But if you burn a lot of electricity for an hour or so that you can then generate electricity for the rest of the day, it seems like it might be a reasonable trade-off. But I'm not a solar engineer. But
well, it all depends upon if it would affect the warranty at all. You know, the heat.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's lots of questions there to ask, and I don't know the answers. Like, I mean, and the information I'm giving you is like I said. I mean, I was just, you know, kicking it around with a solar contractor more than a decade ago. So I would call the people who installed it, the Solar World folks, or your local solar contractor, and ask, you know, what do I do? You gotta have a solution for this. I mean, they're selling a lot of these things in the northern climes. So, Mary Jo, let us know, would you?
Sure. All
okay.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to AM 950. Ed in Pleasant Plains, Illinois, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Fine.
I was just thinking, while you guys were talking about the internet and about net neutrality and all of that, what happens if these people decide to slow our email down, our Facebook down? This is how people organize. I find websites that are assigned, you know, I sign petitions, I talk to people about politics or whatever. What happens if they start slowing us down?
Yeah, I thought about this as a MacGuffin, as a plot device for a novel a couple of years ago. But now I'm thinking that this is a very real possibility that we're all familiar with governments that basically selectively censor the internet. The government of China, the government of Iran, the government of North Korea, many of the Middle Eastern governments. And, you know, they will stop certain Twitter feeds, or they will stop Twitter altogether, or they'll, you know, that sort of thing. What if corporations started doing that? What if Comcast decided, and they were your internet service provider, your ISP, and they decided that they didn't like the fact that you are organizing against the Comcast-Time Warner merger, and so they just blocked your access to the sites, to like freepress.net, for example, you know, the activist sites where people are organizing this stuff. It's entirely within the realm of what they can do right now, and they can do legally, given this most recent Supreme Court, or not, U.S. Circuit Court, or District Court ruling.
Yeah, right.
And it's a little scary, because then you've got fascism by corporation rather than by government. And
right. Or both at once.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's a genuine concern, and this is where you need... You actually need big government to protect you from big corporations. So, Ed, thanks a lot for the call. Paul in Woodinville, Washington, listening on KBCS. Ed, Paul, we just have a minute to the break. I hope you can be brief.
Well, it'll be tough, but I was going to talk about the I'll get part of this out. The leak in the West Virginia chemical plant.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm going to have time to get through this, Tom. So, I don't.
Okay.
Let me call you back.
Okay.
I'll call you back next week.
All right. Thanks a lot, Paul. It's a tough one where I put somebody on and say, you've got 1 minute. But on the other hand, as you are noticing right now, 1 minute can be a really long time. In fact, it's long enough for me to share some Ted Nugent lyrics. This is over at TPM. Josh Marshall has put these things up. Ted Nugent, one of his songs is Jailbait. Well, I don't care that you're just 213. You look too good to be true. I just know you're probably clean. There's one little thing I got to do to you. Or Ted Nugent's song Stranglehold. Here I come again now, baby, like a dog in heat. You ran that night. You left me. You put me in my place. I got you in a stranglehold, baby, the night I crushed your face. It's really? Yeah. Ted Nugent, very interesting fellow.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You know, those family values, underage sex, beating up women, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, Ted Nugent. Mm-hmm. 28 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. John Kenneth Galbraith. Words for the Ages. The modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is, the search for the superior moral justification for selfishness. Irwin, in Brooklyn, New York, listening to WBAI. Hey, Irwin, what's on your mind today?
How do you do, Mr. Hartman? I kind of regret the loss of your three-hour show in New York, but hopefully you can have one day 3 hours on BAI, because New York is now a barren waste.
Well, thank you.
Now, the thing is, 7 years ago, I remember that if you were a Jewish person, you could not join the Birch Society directly. They had an organization specially for Jews. I remember some very, very conservative neighbor who couldn't stop praising the organization for its wonderful Jewishness. Do you know anything about it? I've been trying to track it down. Nobody seems to know anything about it. You said that your father was a member of the Birch Society.
No, he wasn't. Let me correct that. My dad took me to a John Birch Society meeting once. He was not a member. He was not.
Okay.
He was not that crazy, basically. And but he, you know, I was curious. He was exposing me to the political world. I had read None Dare Call It Treason, John Starmer's book, you know, about the communists in the State Department. And so Dad was like, well, these are the people that are all about that kind of stuff, but. So I really don't know that much about the John Birch Society beyond that. I mean, I know the generic outlines, but I don't know about any inclusive or exclusiveness of Jews or any other group. And that would be something for some deep research, which I frankly, Irwin, I apologize, I haven't done. Thank you for the call, though, and thanks for listening to WBAI. David in Whitehorn, California. Hey, David, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
All right, Tom. Good afternoon to you. I'm just wondering, you know, the big banks and the big corporations, they keep getting caught for what they admit is criminal activity,
mm-hmm.
like manipulation of markets and things like that, and they pay a fine,
right?
Like a traffic ticket.
Right.
Well, if you get three traffic tickets, they take your license away, and if you continue driving after that, they throw you in jail, actually. I'm just wondering why, you know, I mean, these guys are once a week, J.P. Morgan's paying a fine for criminal activity.
Yeah. So
I'm wondering why they don't take their license away.
Yeah. Well, there's a really simple answer, and that is that they are so wealthy and so powerful that economic power translates into political power as a consequence
of... Yeah, that's true, because wealthy people just hire a chauffeur to drive them around.
That's right. This is the consequence of having a Supreme Court that has set itself up as the supreme arbiters of our nation's laws, first of all, which is not in the Constitution, through the doctrine of judicial review, and secondly, has then gone on to discover that the First Amendment protects money, using money in a political arena is absolutely protected by the First Amendment, which is, I don't find the word money anywhere in the First Amendment or anywhere in the Constitution for that matter. And that the 14th Amendment protects corporations. And I thought that, you know, the 14th Amendment was passed after the Civil War to get slavery out of the Constitution. I thought we fought the Civil War to free the slaves. I didn't realize we'd fought it to free the corporations. But the Supreme Court, Mr. Scalia, would like you to know that in Citizens United, they pulled this all together, that the First Amendment protects money and the 14th Amendment protects corporations. And therefore, these giant moneyed corporations, the big banks, and their banksters are basically immune. They basically, you know, they've become the tail that wags the dog of government, and it's a tragedy. And we have to get money out of our political system in order to get this cancer out. And that's why I encourage people to go to movetoamend.org, an organization that I have no affiliation with whatsoever, other than I just absolutely endorse what they're doing, and sign up and start spreading the word and educating people, waking people up. David, thank you for the call. Pat in Beloit, Wisconsin, listening to WCPT. Hey, Pat. You want to talk about Scott Walker?
Yeah, and also there's the thing again, money, because, you know probably what happened yesterday with the release of all these emails.
Yeah, we're increasingly learning that when one of the Koch brothers moves their hand, Scott Walker's lips move up and down.
Exactly, and the worst part of it is, Tom, we have an attorney general that's never going to proceed against him because he's God's cop, as he puts himself.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, God does not move him to prosecute the governor of the state. And there's another John Doe going on right now, and big money is coming in and trying to silence it because it has to do with the money that came into the state during the recall. Evidently,
right.
The state constitution doesn't allow some of this, but we've had all these big players coming in and trying to stop it in the courts.
These John Doe investigations are federal investigations, aren't they?
No, they're mostly, the second one is state. They're mostly state.
The AG's office.
Yes, they come out of the Milwaukee area with the first one when he was the county commissioner. But they were working on politics and had a secret email.
Right.
During his run for the governorship.
Right.
And then the second one, there's something in the state law that does not allow some of the things in the federal law.
Yeah, well, and then this caging thing. I mean, you know, now this email that just came out, this is page 1321 of Walker Docs 2, where Walker's chief of staff, Keith Gilkes, is ordering three people to participate in caging, which is, you know, the Republican Party has been operating under a restraining order for several decades, preventing them from caging. Caging is a way of knocking people off the voting rolls. And the email says, and I quote, "We need cagers for this Saturday. We will have plenty to get caught up on. Please bring friends who are that are detail oriented and can put in some solid hours." So, yeah, it's pretty bizarre, Pat. At these levels, with the, you know, these high stakes and these billions of dollars being thrown around, it's almost like, you know, the Chris Christie's and Scott Walker's and Rick Scott's. I mean, here's Rick Scott. He's the governor of Florida. He was convicted of the largest criminal fraud in the history of the United States, and he becomes governor of the state. It's just this bizarre world of Republican politics. Pat, thanks for the call. Thanks for pointing that out. Sherry in Berkeley, in Bradley, California. You wanted to talk about wild horses?
Yes, I do. In 1971, more Americans wrote letters than before or since to pass the 1971 Free Roaming Wild Horse and Burro Act.
Mm-hmm.
They have since found four horses in La Brea tar pit that are 25 million years old. The government, the Bureau of Land Management has been totally taken over by corrupt cattle interests. And, of course, Obama, and during his first administration, appointed Salazar, who is a cattleman. And so they round up these horses, which are supposed to be protected, and the American, our symbol of, our majestic symbol of our freedom, and our National Academy of Sciences said are good for our grass. They clip grass, cows. Since then, these cattlemen have put 10 million subsidized cattle on our public lands. Two of these people who have cattle on our public lands and are subsidized are somebody you might have heard of, the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
They are cruel to these horses. They've been wiping them out. They've already wiped out 100 herds and taken away over 30 million acres from them.
Mm-hmm.
They run them down with helicopters while they're pregnant. They lie and they will say there's a drought and then remove the horses. And
yeah, I'm familiar with this, Sherry. We had T. Boone Pickens' wife on this program about 6 months ago talking about this issue. She's very, very aggressively out for protecting the wild horses. Is there a call to action in there or a website that you wanted to promote or tell people about, or did you just want to bring the issue up so that people are sensitive to it?
Well, I also wanted to say these cattle people have also damaged our I don't know what's one stake, how much water it takes, but a lot.
Yeah.
And they have damaged our natural grasses.
Yeah, I think the net on it is it takes 500 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of beef. But I could be wrong. That's a number I remember from some time back. Sherry, I've got to move along, but thank you. Thank you for your call. This is an issue. Mygel in Bolingbrook, Illinois. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. Miguel is my name.
Miguel, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Yeah, it's okay. Hey, I tried to call you before, and I would like to hear your take on immigration, and this is the reason why I asked. I'm an immigrant myself now. I'm an American citizen, but one of the ideas that I know that's, you know, going around with immigration is the idea of amnesty.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, in my case, if I want to file a petition, you know, for a relative, which I have done, you know, the waiting time is 10 years plus.
Yeah.
So, I think it's just very unfair. And just.
I agree, Miguel. My take on this is that our immigration system is badly broken, needs to be rebuilt from the ground up, and it needs to be done in a way that works for immigrants and that works for the United States. And right now we've got this crazy quilt that doesn't work for anybody except the big corporations and employers who want to employ people who are not here illegally so that they can exploit them, and big high-tech employers who want to bring in, using these H-1B visas, who want to bring in high-tech workers from India who they can pay half the price of indigenous Americans. But yes, I am all in favor of a good, comprehensive immigration reform that cleans this situation up. We don't have an illegal immigrant problem. We have an illegal employer problem. Miguel,
you're
thank you.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'll say that, say that again. We don't have an illegal immigrant problem in this country. We never have. We have an illegal employer problem. This is the problem has been driven at the corporate level. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Sanchez in Long Beach, California, listening to KPFK. Hey, Sanchez, what's up?
Dr. Hartman, a gruvacious day to you, senor.
Well, thank you very, very much.
And I'm not watching you on the television today, but personally, I don't
understand or can't understand how you could say Ted Nugent and family values without just like cracking up laughing, because I'm having a hard time doing that here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I only did it once.
I heard your mention of the Fukushima incident, which occurred on Wednesday, which was being considered now the worst spill in 6 months. And you know that I've been following this story rather carefully. It just seems to me that over the past several weeks and months, every time, let me just back up quickly for a second here just to inform you that about 2 weeks ago, TEBCO was announcing new cracks inside, they were finding cracks with leaks of radioactive and contaminated water inside the nuclear power the reactor number 3 building, and this was due to the little robots that they were sending in there. So week after week after week, TEPCO continually is releasing the information that there's more and more and even more radiation being exposed due to the, you know, the accident there at Fukushima. Meanwhile, today, an EPA official, his name is Bill Keener, he's a public affairs official for the EPA in the San Francisco region, tells us that there is no reason to believe that a second plume is coming. And this is his quote here. The event in March of 2011 released the accumulated gases in the reactors, which sent a bubble of radiation through the water and air. He says, no such accumulation should be occurring today, unquote. And it's really, really difficult to, you know, you've got one side explaining to us here that on the West Coast that, oh, we have nothing to worry about. Yet, it seems like day after day after day, all of the news sources that I've been following tell us that we still have stuff to worry about here. That includes Arne Gunderson. So
yeah.
Who do you believe?
Well, I believe Arne Gunderson. And, you know, it is true that the Pacific Ocean is huge and it's part of, you know, a planet-wide ocean system that vastly dilutes these radioactive elements, and that the distance from Japan to the United States is very, very long, and the heaviest radioactive elements are the most deadly, plutonium being the heaviest, and, you know, will settle to the bottom long before they get to the west coast of the United States. That's true. But there's a huge caveat, and that is the food chain. A lot of these elements are naturally absorbed by plants and animals, particularly strontium and cesium, the mammalian body and plant bodies, but particularly mammals and fish, think that strontium is calcium, and they think that cesium is potassium. And potassium builds our muscles, and calcium, of course, builds our bones. And we absorb them in large quantities, and we absorb them very readily. So when we encounter strontium or cesium, it becomes part of our bodies. And not just us. This is true of little tiny microorganisms, larger microorganisms who eat them, large organisms who eat them, the little fish that eat them, the middle-sized fish who eat the little fish, the big fish who eat the little fish. And eventually, what you've got is radioactive tuna and or salmon or whatever it may be. And particularly these migrating fish like tuna and salmon that go from the, you know, from the Gulf of Japan back to the West Coast. So I think we've got a really serious problem here that we're going to see increase over time in our food supply. Sanchez, thank you very much for the call. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Harmon, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to everyone at our syndicators, Westwood One, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio Networks, Free Speech TV, Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the others around the country, all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, and the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn. To our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, and the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. Back to our Anything Goes Day. Rose in Flemington, New Jersey, listening on WBAI. Hey, Rose, companies counting our vote?
Hi. Well, I just want to discuss, you had mentioned the other day that there are companies that count our votes. I'm unfortunately blind and have neither TV nor internet, and I just wanted to know who those companies are and where are they located in the greatest concentration, and where would we find who accepts their financial favors?
Right. I'm not up on the on who's what in the food chain of the voting machine companies over the last year or two, and it's been a very dynamic industry. But in the early years, in 2002 to around 2010, I was doing a lot of writing on this topic. Brad Friedman is the guy who's the real genius and expert on this, and he writes over at bradblog.com. But I can tell you that, for example, there are two brothers who I believe were in Nebraska, and they started a voting machine company. They hired a former right-wing radio talk show host to be the CEO of their company, and he then decided to run for the United States Senate, and magically, but maybe not magically, maybe he was just a brilliant campaigner, but won as a Republican, even African-American districts that had never gone Republican ever in the history of the state, and that was Chuck Hagel, who is now our Secretary of Defense. He was the CEO of what became ES&S, Voting Machine Company, which is one of the big players. Another one was Diebold, which is a company that makes the banking machines. They also make voting machines, or at least made them. I'm assuming that they're still making them. The president of Diebold in the last George W. Bush election wrote rather infamously a letter saying that he was going to make sure that Ohio went for George Bush. This was in the 2004 election when Ohio was pivotal versus John Kerry. And then, weirdly enough, there's a company, and I can't remember the name of it, that is Venezuelan-owned, and that was counting a lot of our votes, and that it was partly owned as a state enterprise and controlled by Hugo Chavez back in the day. And, you know, so who are the major players right now in the voting machine business? I can't tell you right off the top of my head what the percentages are. Brad could. And we should get him on one of these days to talk about it. In fact, I will get him on one of these days to just give us a,
sounds,
you know.
Sounds like a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
And, it's what strikes me as so funny. You can't get a pack of Twinkies out of any convenience store in America without a receipt.
Yeah.
Or a bank. But you're not allowed to have a receipt when you vote. When I lived in New York City, I used to work the polls, you know, getting there at 5:30 in the morning, watching the activities. And I've been able to, despite my blindness, able to follow all the crazy various elections in the last 10 years and how things happen so quickly. And it is done by telephone. And the guys on WBAI have a program called Off the Hook and keep on bragging on how easy it is to just bust into these machines.
Yeah.
And this on top of the idea that we don't have the League of Women Voters running any more than two parties in the debates is extremely depressing. But I think in this coming midterm, we're going to see a big change in the old reliables. They're not going to be there for the main parties. I think there's going to be a lot of
I think you're right, Rose. I think that we're facing both the 80-year change. We're facing a generational change. People are waking up.
It's fed up.
Yeah, and
thank
fed up.
Thank you so much
yeah.
for your wonderful show. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rose, and thanks for listening
have
to WBAI. Thanks, you too. Vicki in Mondovi, Wisconsin. Hey, Vicki, thanks for watching Dish Network, Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, you're welcome, Tom. I just wanted to throw this out regarding the woman who's had trouble with her solar panels and ice forming on them.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're made of, but I keep ice off my windshield, my car windshield, with a solution of vinegar and water.
Yeah, well, these might be on her roof, so it might be a little harder to get to.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's the concern. I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they might have been in her front yard, in which case, yeah, some vinegar and water, or even water and salt. Although I don't know if you want to put salt on delicate electronics. But
I don't know what they're made of or anything.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I just thought I'd throw that out.
Well, I look forward to her calling back after she's checked in with her solar contractor, because I can't imagine that the solar industry hasn't looked at this and come up with some sort of a solution. So, Vicki, thank you for the call. I just have a minute left. I want to get another caller in here. Mark in Nashville, Tennessee. Quick comment you want to make about Republicans and Christianity?
Yeah, Tom. I think I'm your only Southern caller today, but Yeah, 90% of your calls could be fixed with one solution, and that is the constitutional amendment redefining corporations as non-persons. Not what I really wanted to call in about. I called in about, yeah, we got midterms coming up. Good chance that Democrats could possibly lose the Senate and lose, more spaces in the House. And I think it's high time for Democrats to begin to publicly challenge these Republican candidates and challenge their Christianity. You know, I've got Marsha Blackburn over here who, you know, the chances of a Democrat ever holding that seat probably pretty slim, but I think if a Democrat stood up and said, Marsha, how do you kneel down on Sunday and praise this guy who gave his life for the poor and then turn around and cut food stamps on Monday,
yeah.
I think...
You're absolutely right, Mark. We need to, and not just Democrats, but progressives right across the board, need to be making these economic issues moral issues. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active, and occupy something. We'll see you Monday. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.